happy Thanksgiving, and welcome to Minute 104 of The Great Escape Minute, the daily podcast where we dig into The Great Escape 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me on this lovely Thanksgiving morning, day, however you want to look at it, is Father David Mowry, chaplain to the Movies by Minute community. Welcome back, Father David, and happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Pass the gravy. I'm going to dive right into these mashed potatoes.
Wait. First, let's talk about The Great Escape, and then you can go and eat.
Oh, all right. Fair enough.
Hold off just a little bit.
Oh, but it looks so good. I mean, how did you get this turkey to look so golden brown? I'm so impressed, Rob.
It's because it's kosher. Yeah, there you go. The secrets that you didn't know. Minute 104 begins with Henley making an offer and goes all the way till Colin starts having second thoughts. So, once again, we're continuing with this great debate in The Great Escape between Roger and Henley, with Colin just sitting by and watching while sitting on the bottom of a bunk bed, looking at both of them while they're standing up. We've been discussing all week the pros and cons of taking a blind man on an escape like this or not. Kept it no secret that I think that Roger is correct in everything that he's saying, even though I'm a fan of Henley. But I think at this point, all of his reasoning just doesn't really pan out. Henley starts thinking about it, and, you know, as we ended yesterday, Roger basically said, well, I'm the one who's making the decisions here. Taking a blind man is just an unnecessary risk that's going to ruin it for everybody. So we get a few seconds of Henley thinking about this particular predicament. And he actually...
I love those couple of seconds of silence. I love that the movie, coming from that older style of filmmaking, gives these kind of character moments time to breathe.
Yes.
Where
literally,
we can see Henley's resolve building as he is about to make this offer. And overall, the pacing of this movie, yeah, we've joked, it's a 3-hour movie, so it's a commitment to watch. But when you settle into it and you're away from the more frenetic pace of movie making that we have in the 21st century, and you go back into some 20th century filmmaking, it's really nice that we have moments like this treated with as much attention and care that the big laser show light specials get in, say, a contemporary Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And I like the fact that people say if you're watching a 3-hour movie, so it's got to be very tight, and it, you know, everything's got to be sharp and great editing and things like that. But they do take their time along the way to let us see the characters thinking at certain points. Mm-hmm. So here, you know, we get a few seconds of Henley thinking, and then he like inhales deeply right before he says it. So I've always wondered if that inhalation is... Should I say this? Am I going to be causing myself more problems by putting out this offer? And then he's like, the heck with it. I'm going to do it. You know, he then makes a statement. Colin's not a blind man as long as he's with me, and he's going with me. First of all, that's a pretty silly statement. What do you mean he's not a blind man as long as he's going with me? He's still a blind man. He's now jeopardizing my escape. That's what he's doing.
Well, that's the beauty of the offer that Henley is making, that he is willing to put himself at greater risk in order to give Blythe a shot to escape. And he is offering to be another man's eyes. You know, this is a sentiment that we hear often, you know, someone being another person's eyes, someone who is someone else's ears, if that person is blind or is deaf.
But the offer that Henley is making.
I think if people are willing to do that in ordinary life, you know, how much more is it needed during a prison escape? That this offer is being made speaks to Henley's character. You know, we've seen Henley be an operator throughout this film, being able to manipulate people, get what he needs, be really crafty, a bit of a scoundrel. But here we see Henley's nobility. We see his willingness to sacrifice himself for others. And it is indeed a sacrifice because he's shackling himself to a blind man. It is going to make his escape that much harder. And for all that, this is still the decision that makes sense given the dynamic between Handley and Bly's characters. Now, whether it's the right or wrong thing to do, I don't know, but it certainly speaks to the genuine friendship that exists between these two men.
No question about it. I mean, I was questioning the way that he says it, not the act itself. The act itself, obviously, is very selfless, and it says a lot about his true character deep down. But just by phrasing it, by saying that, okay, he's not blind as long as he's with me. I don't know. I think the.
He's speaking metaphorically.
Completely, but of course he's speaking metaphorically. But it's still, you know, it's not as if he's going to see. I mean, later on we'll see in the movie, you know, how much he really needs to help Henley. Henley needs to help Blythe out. You know, there's a point where they're walking through the barracks, and he needs to steer him away from a stove so that he doesn't bump into it. Which is a great scene, but it shows how deeply blind this character really is. And you know, Henley really needs to watch out for him in such a powerful way. Yeah, no, I just find it's just a funny way to phrase the his sentiment here of what he's saying, and then he like tops off the line with saying, "And he is going with me," meaning, you know, you may be my commanding officer as we've discussed earlier in the week, but I'm still the one who's making the final decision here. Again, I think that that's just for the audience, you know, to show a little bit of conflict between these, you know, two top billed actors. I don't think there's anything beyond that.
Well, I think Roger recognizes that Henley knows the risks, knows what he's doing, and respects the decision that Henley is making here. If Henley is willing to jeopardize his own escape by guiding Blythe through, I think Roger figures, okay, I'll let him do that. Because Henley has said here, he thinks he can make it all the way. He has that romantic desire to get all the way home. It's not enough for him to just harass the enemy behind the front lines, but he wants to get all the way home. And with that goal in mind, he's still willing to make this self-sacrificial decision to give Blythe the same chance.
Right. That's very true.
I think Roger is respecting that, and it's a moment of humanity for Roger.
Yes.
And he's already in a bit of existential angst because he's feeling the weight of the command. Of course, heavy is the head that wears the crown. And so I think Henley's catching him in at a good point rhetorically to make this argument. And Roger is open to being persuaded to change his mind because he's having doubts about his own responsibilities as being in command.
Yes. Yes, that's very true. Then we get a very short shot of Blythe himself, which he looks really funny in the way that, you know, once again, they're showing him. He's the child sitting in listening to his parents fighting about something, and he has nothing to offer. And, you know, he looks in some ways bored, but he also looks like, okay, I don't really want to be here. I don't want to be in the middle of this argument. Don't fight over me or whatever it may be. And I love the way they change the music cue at that point, because then you start getting an upbeat, you know, tone to the whole thing. It's just like, okay, we've had this, you know, 3.5 minute somber conversation, and boom, now we've found a solution, and we're going to move along with it. And things are back on track. So let's deal with an upbeat type of music. And then Roger turns to him and goes, "Well, is that okay with you?" It's funny at this point he's asking Colin's permission for this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you
right, as if Blythe said, "Oh no, actually no, this is not okay with me." Well, but it's possible Blythe could say, "No, I don't want to jeopardize Henley's escape. I recognize that I'm too much of a burden." But I think in this moment Blythe is honoring the sacrifice that Henley's willing to make. He's honoring their friendship. And that is often something that's very difficult to do. The hard part often is not giving a gift. The hard part is receiving a gift.
Yes.
And being able to do so graciously. And there's a lot of false selflessness that can come into a moment like this. Like, oh, no, I couldn't possibly. No, I wouldn't want to jeopardize your escape. Oh, no, just leave me behind. It's fine. And, you know, play the martyr act to make people insist upon it so that you can appear selfless. But I think Blythe does the really charitable thing here and accept accept Henley's own offer of charity.
Yes. You know, then you see a smile creep on his face as he says, oh, yes, quite. You know, he's realized that.
Yeah.
And then we get a quick shot of Henley and a quick shot of Roger. They're both once again questioning whether this is a good idea. You know, now that both of them were partially hoping that Colin would say, I don't think it's a good idea. You know, maybe that's what Henley was aching for here. You know, that maybe he feels that he knows Colin well enough that Colin's not going to agree to it. So because sometimes, you know, making an offer, even though you know that the answer is going to be no, you still get the credit for making the offer. So I wonder if that's part of what was expected here, you know. And he's like, and he actually said yes. Oops.
No, exactly. You're supposed to say no. Don't agree to this. This is madness.
At this point, Roger then says, okay, well, I'll arrange for your escape numbers to be altered accordingly. Basically, just a quick explanation to anyone who isn't aware. You know, each one of the 250 prisoners that were getting out were given a number. In the real escape, there were certain people that were assigned certain numbers. And then the rest of them, there was a lottery where they would decide who would go and what number they would get. So at this...
Oh, there's a lottery.
Because if you have a prison... If you have a prison camp of 600 prisoners and you're only going to get 250 out, you might as well let fate make that decision. You know, you don't want to have Roger, as we've discussed earlier this week about, you know, commanding officers having to make certain decisions. You know, why should he have to make that decision if you could just put all the names in the hat, you know, and decide at that point?
Right.
So that works. So it's interesting that he mentions this. Because it's a way to explain to the audience that, okay, this is being done in an orderly fashion. This isn't just random. Mm-hmm. And then he quite formally says good night to everybody and rushes out of there. You know, he's trying to get out of there as quickly as possible at this point.
Well, he has escape numbers to rearrange. He's got to change the spreadsheet. He has to change the seating chart. He's got so much paperwork that has to happen now that we're taking this blind man along with us.
We know that we're taking him, but or actually, maybe he already made the change. He said, all right, you know, Smith, you're now going to go instead of Colin. And now he's got to go tell Smith, wait a second. I know I told you that you were going to be going soon, but there's been a change of plans.
I hate these last minute disappointments. There's just been an unending domino chain of last minute letdowns as Roger goes from room to room and everyone has been able to convince him to let him escape instead of being denied the spot. And so there's someone at the end of this chain where Roger says, no, dang it, someone's not going and it's going to be you. I've had everyone else talk me into it, but I don't care what your story is. You're not going.
Exactly. And then so Roger leaves the room and Henley closes the door. Did you notice that they have hanging right near the stove? They have these like little towels, these hand towels, you know. So this is a way for them to show that I guess these are the towels that they need to use when they're taking showers or washing up or whatever it is. So that's one of the things I love about this movie is the detail. You know, most movies wouldn't even have them there.
Excellent set dressing.
Exactly. You wouldn't have it here. It's not necessary. It doesn't add to the story itself, but it actually does because it gives you more information about what type of supplies these various characters all have to deal with in the camp at this point.
And as we established, Henley is very good at laundry because he keeps his sweater white and crisp and clean. And so
that is true.
I imagine those are some of the cleanest towels in the entire camp.
Yeah, they don't look as white as his turtleneck, but it's actually very true. And at this point, Colin starts having cold feet, and he basically says, well, you know, he is right. He's completely right. I probably shouldn't go at all. At this point, he says that his eyes have actually been getting worse and worse lately. Now, when he says lately, is he referring to in the last few minutes? Just a few minutes ago, I was able to pick up a pin and almost put up my eye with it. You know, but at this point, my eyesight's getting worse and worse.
So he's noticed. So that what that says to me is his eyesight has been going over time. This hasn't happened all in one shot. I think it's one of those moments where now that it's this bad, he's able to look back and be honest with himself and say, this has been going on for a while. I didn't want to admit it. But now that things are so bad that it's threatening my escape from the prison camp, I have to face facts and say my eyesight's been getting worse for a long time, not just in the last couple of weeks or however long it's been since Egolas really fouled up that password.
No, that was just a few minutes ago. That happened tonight. You know, the whole thing with fouling up the 4 days' work on the passport.
Really? So that's all the same. This is all the same day.
Yeah.
Boy, it seemed to me that at least some time had passed between that scene and this one. But if this is happening the same day, then I'm very impressed with Mac's intelligence operation.
Exactly. That was my point. That it literally happened. Let's say a few hours ago at the most. You know, because when you have that scene, and then right after that you have, you know, everyone training with Mac, practicing their German. Mm-hmm. Things like that. Yeah, yeah. It definitely happened tonight. So
wow.
All right. So as we've been discussing all week, this is Donald Pleasant Appreciation Week, and on this Thanksgiving, what would you like to? Which one of his films would you now like to highlight?
Well, how about a little slice of Americana? We've been looking at Donald's films from the mid 1960s, and things have been pretty heavy the last couple of days. A murder trial, a homeless man being abused, and the devil showing up to tempt Jesus of Nazareth. So yeah, how about something a little lighter? How about The Hallelujah Trail? The 1965 comedy in which Donald Pleasance plays Oracle Jones, a wilderness guide who's able to see into the future thanks to the influence of alcohol, and is able to lead his local town of miners to a big old whiskey shipment that's going to see them through one of the worst winters they're about to experience. It's one of the great big comedies of the 1960s in the same style as things like The Great Race or It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. And it one of those epic comedies. So this, again, is close on to being a 3-hour movie. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. And the madcap zaniness of it is pretty obvious. Now, it's fair to say that the depiction of Native Americans in this film is not what we would want it to be. So take that for what it's worth. And make sure that your expectations are adjusted accordingly. But it is really wild to see Donald Pleasance playing this old-timey prospector-style character when we're so used to the more serious, reserved depiction here of Blythe, or the heavier, more dramatic roles that we've had in The Guest or in Dr. Crippen.
Right. All right, well, that's another recommendation. It's another one. So far, you're three out of four that I haven't seen. So you've given me some movies to watch. This is something that looks really interesting, and it's also directed by John Sturges, who surprisingly is the director of The Great Escape.
But he could see the comedic potential in Donald Pleasance's performance, and we've seen it all week. I mean, it's just been laugh a minute this week on The Great Escape, and so clearly completely. Donald Pleasance is just a comedic genius.
Yeah, and I see that it's with Burt Lancaster and Lee Remick and Jim Hutton. Mm-hmm. I've always loved movies with Jim Hutton. That's Timothy Hutton's father. Brian Keith, Martin Landau, John Anderson. Wow. All right, that I'm definitely going to have to take a look at that one. All right, do you want to tell everyone once again how they can get in touch with you after they finish their Thanksgiving meal?
After you finish yours. Well, I mean, of course, mine's going to take a while yet, so I may be a bit delayed in getting back to you. But you can find me on Twitter at Father Mowry, that's FRMOWRY, or you can swing by my website, fatherdavidmowry.com, take a look at a blog post that hopefully I have updated at least this year, maybe this month, who knows, maybe I've been productive, and to take a look at the other Movies by Minutes appearances that I've done in the past, talking about other movies.
All right, great. And you can contact us by going to our Facebook group, The Cooler. Our Twitter account is Great Escape MXM, and our website is thegreatescapeminute.com. And if you want to send us an email, you can send it to thegreatminute@gmail.com. So once again, happy Thanksgiving to everyone, and we'll see you tomorrow. Tally-ho!
Tally-ho! Gobble, gobble.